Win at Work and Life with Nikki Bush is a podcast where we explore what it means to win at both work and life. Today, you get to choose how to create a life of meaning and self-expression that includes both your work and life outside the office with your family.
In this episode, I'll be talking to Yael Geffen, CEO and shareholder of Lew Geffen Sotheby's International Realty, as well as a member of the Europe, Middle East, India and Africa Region Task Force for Sotheby's International Realty. Yael, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Lovely to be here.
Let's kick off with the really interesting part of your very substantial bio, which says that you have a love affair with sloths. Tell us more.
I do. I don't know why. I've never actually held a sloth. I've just always loved them, and my dream was to one day be in the Amazon and embrace a sloth, even if I get cut up to pieces. And I think I just admire them for their perseverance. They're so slow, yet they don't know it. It's like the bee, right? The bee defies all laws of aviation, but the bee doesn't know it, so it flies anyway. You know, and sloths have no idea of how slow they are, but they're so lovely and they carry on and they bring a lot of comic joy. And I don't know if you ever saw Kristen Bell on The Ellen Show. She's so obsessed with sloths that even if you talk about a sloth, she like bursts into tears. So I guess I'm similar to her.
So I'm going to pick up on something you said there, that they have perseverance. Mm. And it leads me to think about endurance. And you were born into a real estate dynasty that has endured over many years. Give us a bit of the history of this dynasty. And did you always know that you wanted to be in property?
So I love that people refer to it as a dynasty, because then I'm like, well, where's my jet and where's my yacht if it's such a dynasty? But it started off with my grandmother, Aida Geffen, who in the 50s was the first lady to pioneer real estate and the first person in South Africa to franchise real estate offices around the country. So she was very charismatic and, yeah, just a powerful pioneer and leader. And that was in the 50s. And my father actually worked for her. And, you know, they say a small tree can't grow under a big tree. So he branched out in 1982 to start his own real estate agency called Lew Geffen Estates, which he opened with my mother, Sandy Geffen. And they started off super small in like a tiny passage in some rental office where you could hear all the agents talking to each other. So then they quickly became quite a dominant force in real estate, and they realized they needed an edge to the luxury market, and that's when the affiliation with Sotheby's International Realty began. So did I want to be in real estate? Hell no. In fact, I escaped to the States to avoid this very fact. And I just wanted to find out who I was. I wanted to find out what it's like to be anonymous and not Lou and Sandy Geffen's daughter. And it was the most beautiful experience. I spent 4 years in New York City doing many different disciplines, even packing shoes in a shoe factory in Queens, which I absolutely loved because there was no cerebral part of that. You just get your cash at the end of the day. And I was devastated when they took that job away from me because they needed a 6'2", well-built man who was far more equipped to handle big boxes than I. But anyway, I got over it. And then I spent 2 years in Los Angeles, which I hated compared to New York. I'm more of a New Yorker. And then my best friend's father passed away, and I was also let go because it was their 2008 crash. So I was let go alongside 14 other people that day. And in America, it's very different. You know, we have the CCMA here and hearings, and they support the employee there. It's like, today's your last day. But, you know, I was privileged because I got 2 weeks' notice with one other and everyone else had
now,
to
you always see in
day.
The movies that they walk out with the box. One little box.
I promise you. And it's real, hey? It's not, you know.
Fantasy, yeah.
No, it isn't. So I was let go. I was in a six-year relationship that ended at the same time. And my best friend's father passed away. And I thought, let me go to South Africa and just for a visit. And I stayed. I met my ex-husband, who is my little one's father. And, you know, life, what's that famous saying? Life happens when you're making other plans. And then I was never going to go into real estate. And my brother passed away in 2009. And he actually made me an alternate director. Now, I was helping with the marketing of our company at that point. And now I'm on the board. And it was quite a journey. I mean, I started off being an apprentice for my father because I thought, you know, I can't come in not knowing about the industry, not knowing about what it's like to be in the coalface. So I then was on the board for a long time, since 2009, right? 2010. And then in 2016, our former CEO, we had an incident and I was kind of thrust into leadership after something very traumatic for the brand and for us, for our staff. And here I am today trying to avoid real estate, but now I'm the CEO and a shareholder. Life happens when you're making other plans. Here I am. But what is exciting is that it was exciting for me to go into a very male-dominated industry. In the 50s, there was Aida Geffen and Pam Golding, you know. And now there's men in these leadership positions. I'm the only one who's the youngest and female CEO of the big brands, you know. And I guess I'm motivated to inspire other women to step into leadership positions within the real estate industry.
What a fascinating, fascinating journey. And it's so interesting for me that, you know, you were prepared to take on jobs in that time in the US that were totally unrelated to, you know, what you were born into, that enabled you to see yourself differently, to experience yourself differently. And I think it's so important. In my own developmental journey, I've often taken the road less traveled. And I love going into places where nobody knows who I am. Mm. And I can just be and not be expected to live up to the picture.
The expectations.
Yeah. You know? So it's very empowering to do that. A lot of people find that also quite scary. Because you step out of your comfort zone, of course, and maybe you have to start again or a new beginning or, you know, all of those types of things. But it's the only way you discover what you don't know.
Absolutely. I mean, I did a BA in communications and economics, and then I did a post-grad degree in integrated communication strategy and brand management. And then I go to the States and I am a receptionist, which was fun, I have to say. And they love the South African voice. They think we're very smart.
Exotic.
They think we're very smart. And then I was also, like I said, a shoe packer in Queens. And I was like a gypsy living on people's couches, illegally subletting. And it was such an experience. And that really made me who I was. But I think the nature of who I am is I'm very driven and I'm naturally quite competitive. So when I was a receptionist for the animation studio that I worked for, which was just such a gift and a dream to be surrounded by the most creative people, such fun. And what happened was, I landed up within a couple months being recruited for the sales team and then, you know, promoted to a producer. I just think I've got a natural tendency to lead. not trying to be arrogant, but even in school, they just put me in places. And so, I mean, I've had to embrace that over the years. And maybe I am a leader. Maybe that's just who I am. But I want to be an authentic one, not an arrogant one, and not thinking that I'm better than anyone else.
There's two things that come to mind for me as you're speaking. And the one is you have the leadership gene, clearly. The second one is that you're a learner. You're open to learning. Otherwise, you would never be able to take on all those different roles and keep elevating yourself within the role. And you mentioned that you're competitive.
Don't play me at 30 seconds. You'll lose.
Oh, brilliant. Well, I'm a games person, so we'll do that. We'll do that one evening.
We can do a challenge.
But you were the winner of the 2020 Standard Bank prestigious Top Woman in Property Award. And you were chosen to represent South Africa as a speaker for the World Leaders Summit in November 2021. Tell us a bit more about those two events, why they were important to you, and have they helped you to elevate yourself and other women in the process?
Definitely. You know, when you're the chairman's daughter and you are a female in a male-dominated industry and you're very young, I was 38 when I took over as CEO, you have some challenges. And for me, I knew I had it in myself. I just needed the credibility amongst not only the industry, amongst my own network. And winning the Top Women in Property was just that. It was a wonderful opportunity to garner more support and promote women in leadership for my network. There were incredible women alongside me. I honestly didn't think I'd win. And it was just a nice, you know, I always say celebrate your wins. Don't use humble, privileged, all of that. Because if you're really humbled and privileged, you know, you wouldn't say stuff like that. I got to be honest. So I was so excited. I celebrated my win. My network was so excited for me. I got so many congratulations. And, you know, I think it's also nice for your own confidence to win something that means something to you and also gives you more credibility and gravitas. And with the World Leaders Summit, I was one of, I think, two or three South Africans and that was chosen. And it was wonderful. It was this global mecca of amazing people in all different fields. And it was a wonderful opportunity for me, for our country, and for my position. But I do believe in servant leadership in terms of what you said earlier. I'm willing to learn. I don't think there's any other way of leadership, really, that we're coming to admire, you know? I think we're kind of done with the fearing the leader. And, you know, we want leaders to embrace us. So did those help me? For sure. And I'm always putting myself out there to create that promotional space for my company, for personal branding, which is essential to any leader in a company. It's not vain. It's not arrogant. It's part of the job. And I'm teaching our real estate agents to have that personal branding empowered by Lou Geffen Sotheby's Realty, because this is the time to do it. And it's not an arrogant thing. It's important.
Yeah, everybody is a unique brand of one.
Exactly.
And in turn, they bring that brand under the umbrella of whomever they work for.
Exactly.
But we need to empower our people to see that they are a brand of one. And no two people within your organization are the same. And that's why they'll attract different customers, different clientele, based on personality, based on experience, based on skill. You know, it's all of those things that go to color in what I call your talent profile. And everybody's talent profile is absolutely unique. Now, what's also unique to you, Yael Geffen, is that you are not just a property dynamo, but you are also a mental health advocate. Mm. Where does that come into your story?
Only in the last few years, because I realized it's such an important part of who I am that one needs to embrace your authentic self in order to be the best version of yourself. And one needs to be the best version of yourself in order to be a good leader and to be likable amongst people, amongst your family, friends, and people you work with. So I guess what happened was I realized that, you know, people do not take mental health in the same way as they discuss diabetes, cancer, flu. And for me, when I was in the States, actually, so I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. I'm very lucky that I have the mild one versus the severe one, because brain chemistry is a thing. And my favorite is when someone's feeling depressed, you know, people who don't understand say, go to the gym, you'll feel so much better, or just go here, because they don't understand. And I think it's so important for any leader to understand the humanness of the humans that are working with them. So for me, I just thought to myself, it's time to come out about who I am, and that this isn't just a burden, it's a brilliant burden in terms of who I am and what it's made me and the abilities it's given me. I am a very empathic, compassionate leader because this has allowed me to be that, and gentle and understanding. And I realize that, you know, people are the most amazing resource. And if you don't care about people and support and nurture the people in your organization, they will never be the best version of themselves in the work sphere, and they won't be able to produce the KPIs, the deliverables, the targets. So that's kind of what happened with me. And then all of a sudden I became this advocate, really. It was just a natural progression. I lost my brother. He took his life in 2013. So it's very close to me. I've lost a lot of people along the way. And suicide touches all of us. And right now, it touches all of us more than ever. If you think about it, each of us knows someone in our circle that committed suicide or attempted suicide. And that's scary. That never used to be as much. And one had always heard about celebrities doing it, but it's come very close in our circles. So if we don't learn how to upskill ourselves with our own mental health, we are fooling ourselves. It's a very important part of wellness and self-care. And I think my plight is to just really reduce the stigma and to inspire others to come forward and also share their journey, because it makes me a better leader. Honestly, the stats, the data are there. People who suffer from mental health challenges are greater in leadership positions. If you look at the most historical figures of our society, whether it's Churchill, whether it's comedians like Robin Williams, they were touched with fire and they made such an impact in the world. So it is a brilliant burden.
I love the way you phrase that, my brilliant burden. And you also talk about my mess is my message.
Mm. I actually would love to say I came up with that. I didn't. It was around. And Laurie Milner from, I think she's got a company, Little Black Dress.
Beyond the Dress.
Beyond the dress. That's it. You see? Thank you.
You see, we're in the same network.
Thank you so much for correcting me. So she said it the one day and I thought, oh, I love that, because I've realized that by discussing my mess and by discussing it's okay to not be okay, I've been able to touch so many people and realize that people are struggling. Even in executive leadership positions, we all go through
stuff. We all have baggage.
We all have our baggage. We all have our
stuff. Everyone has a story.
Everyone has a story, for sure. And sometimes it's a beautiful thing to make your mess your message, you know, without obviously devaluing your brand and your company. So there is a fine line. But, you know, the people that I love the most are the messiest.
Love that. So you've got to name it to tame it. Mm-hmm. If you keep it completely under wraps, of course, you're spending so much energy keeping, if you think about a blown up beach ball.
Mm.
If that is your mess, whatever the mess is, if you're trying to keep that submerged underwater, the amount of pressure the water is exerting on the ball means you've got to exert constant pressure to keep that ball underwater and hidden. And I actually got this analogy from Madeleine Black, who's the courage cultivator. And I've interviewed her on my podcast before. And I just thought, what a brilliant analogy. If you're spending so much energy covering up, hiding your mental health issue or your trauma or whatever it is, you're also missing out on the joy of living. Whereas if you can bring it to light in a healthy way, and you're saying, you know, in a healthy way, in a way that is good for you, good for your brand, etc. If you take the time to learn about your condition, become aware of it and manage it, because that's the responsibility you have.
Absolutely.
Is how can you best manage it? You really can find magic in the mess. And I think that that's what you are doing with your work, is encouraging people to own all of who they are and to bring them their whole selves to the table. Warts and all.
Yeah.
Because it can bring so much magic to the table if you frame it the right way.
And I think there's a third part of the name. What was it? Name?
Name it to tame it.
Tame it and not carry shame in it.
Yes, I love that.
Because the shame is really what prevents us. It is. It's the killer.
That's why you keep the beach ball submerged.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, it's interesting. I've done so much work kind of bringing this to light, just of my, you know, time. I don't have much free time and it is quite exhausting, but it's so important to me. And I've done a lot of talks. I've been on a lot of platforms to really share and shed the light on this. And organizations have contacted me, like Join Panda, which is an app which is brilliant, and they provide mental health for everyone. Mental health and mental wellness should be accessible for everyone. It's not just for the privileged. It doesn't discriminate. It reaches us all, honestly. So if people can have the resources, and there are resources, suicide is not the only resort, you know, and the stigma doesn't have to be there if we can open up. When I reach out to my network, next month is International Mental Health Month, and I'm providing them with, well, I'm letting the cat out of the bag now because I was going to do this announcement, but I don't know when you air this podcast, so I might be fine. And I'm actually giving them free sessions with Panda, because the experts that are with Panda, because it's such an important part of their well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a little bit jealous.
No, because, I'm jealous of you.
No, I'm jealous because I'd known you as, I came to know you as a speaker, as a fellow speaker, when you were talking about this exact issue of mental health. And you have done exactly what you say you do. Being an authentic leader, you've taken this into your own business and you've made mental health an issue people can talk about. And I'm jealous because one of your career highlights is that you got to interview Dr. Edith Eger in 2021. And I read all her books, The Choice and The Gift. And what an inspiration this Auschwitz survivor is. She's now 95. I think her first book she published at 92.
96 now.
She's 96 now.
Just celebrated her 96.
And she's a psychologist. And she took her mess and her burden of being the survivor, and over the years unpacked what it meant to her. And it was a journey. It's not something you do overnight. You live with trauma. You process trauma. It's not an event. It's a process. And
there's always triggers.
And you got to interview her. So tell us about that really special moment, because it was a really special moment for you. It wasn't something that you didn't even think she would reply, did you?
No, I didn't. I mean, honestly, it's like, how do I go from here? Because it's been my highest career highlight to date. And, you know, unless I'm on Oprah one day or on the TED stage, I don't know how you top this, really. But it came from a place of not wanting to boast or people to see me as someone, it came from a place of who can I get that is the most encompassing person of resilience, of survival, and of having suffered from severe post-traumatic stress. Because I wanted my network for our convention in 2021, which
in the middle
virtual,
of COVID,
to have an inspiring, motivational keynote speaker, but that had depth. And I reached out to her on a website. I mean, I don't know, you know, I've learned in the most recent years to put my hand up, which is quite a thing because you think, oh, who am I to put my hand up? But it's not about that. You have to treat yourself as your own company, not get taken away by ego. So what I did was I went to her website and I literally pressed the contact button and I told her my story and I told her how I'd love to have her as a speaker. I didn't even think I'd get a response, honestly. And I've been obsessed with books like hers, like Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. I think my message is empower yourself with reading. I love reading. And if you have a mess, research the mess. And I wanted to understand who I was. And I've always loved psychology and books based about psychology and personal development. So I had read The Choice a year before and I just was so blown away and I recommend it to everyone. And I contacted her. I got a response from her assistant saying, Edith would love to be interviewed by you. And I actually burst out crying. First, I nearly vomited on the spot. Then I burst out crying because I thought this is ridiculous. How? I have never been more nervous for an interview in my life than interviewing Dr. Edith Eger. And by the end of it, she called me her grandma. She did her famous leg kick. But it was such a powerful and poignant interview. And the beauty is I have that footage for the rest of my life. So when my son learns about the Holocaust one day, I can share that with him. I can share this with people. And I haven't boosted or promoted that. And it's got over 20,000 views.
Wow.
Just on Facebook. I haven't even put a link on YouTube, which I should have actually. but it was, I don't know how you top that, honestly, and it brought my network to tears and they just loved it. And she's amazing. And I reach out to her assistant all the time and I say hi and I follow her. And it's just, I don't know, she's incredible. And it just shows that she's a servant leader as well, because she didn't think she was too good to be interviewed by me.
And the word that comes up for me about her, having read her stuff, watched videos, etc., is authentic.
Mm.
She's really authentic. She's not trying to be something she isn't or somebody she isn't. She just puts herself out there as she is. And she's a tiny little lady. And she's
so cute.
And you know, I just love watching her. She just embodies humanity, doesn't she?
Mm.
You know, just being human, being vulnerable. But she's also clear and direct.
Very. I mean, I love the two of the most powerful quotes that I took out of her books was, suffering is universal, victimhood is optional. You know, if you're in my body just went cold as I said that. If you think about it, and you're in a concentration camp and you see your mother burn to flames in a chimney, in an exterminator, in the ovens in front of you, and you're able to transcend that into meaning and to help the world. It's crazy. And then one can always find, her other quote, one can always find hopefulness in hopelessness. And you're right. I mean, she's this tiny little thing and she's so big. She's just, her persona is so big and she's so authentic and she's so lovely. And to meet her is to love her. I just, you know, she gave me a hug, a virtual hug at the end. She told me to come to her birthday. You know, she's just the most divine human being.
Oh, that's so beautiful. So Edith Eger's message of authenticity is really important, whether you need to be authentic in your personal relationships, whether you need to be an authentic leader, be authentic in your relationships with people, at work with you. authenticity is key. Showing up as the real you, the whole you, all the time. We have work and we have life. Mm. And over the years of women coming into the workplace, you know, there was this thing of you leave yourself at home when you come to work and you leave your work self at work when you go home. And I've never been an advocate of that.
Oh, good, good.
Part of my mission has been to help people to see themselves as one integrated person and that work and home are different avenues of self-expression. Mm. And I've never believed in splicing and dicing yourself up into a million pieces. Now, you're a mum. Mm. You're having to integrate being a mum into this very big job of yours, this busy work life of yours. Do you have any advice for people around work-life integration? I mean, the one thing I will say is balance is a myth.
There is no such thing. You said that. There's no such thing as balance. I'm sorry. There's just no such thing. And add brain chemistry to that and woo! I love that you said that because I'm always asked if I'm on a women's leadership talk or how do you balance work and life? And there is no such thing. I integrate my child into my life so much so. And we've seen that during COVID where that news broadcaster had his kid stumbling into the room and then the wife came after and you landed up loving him more and feeling, you know, more accessible to him, you know.
He was human.
He was human. Yeah. And it's just wonderful what happened in that space in terms of authenticity. So my son is very funny. I've integrated my life so much so that I'm on like a virtual call. I have to tell him, like, listen, you cannot interrupt this at all if I'm talking or speaking.
And look, for our listeners, he is around 9 years of age.
Nine. But most of the time, even if I'm on a Zoom call with my staff or my colleagues, he'll come in and he'll say, Mommy, do you know where my PlayStation is? And I'll be like, I saw it downstairs. And actually, people love it, you know, as is my dog who you hear the clickety-clackety on the floor. And I'm like, hold on and trigger. Don't come in, you know, because we're human. So for me, it's an important part of showing the world that I'm human and being who I am, which is a mother and a leader and mental health advocate. But it is tiring sometimes, and one has to carve out that space of aloneness. So I often say I should say it more often, to be honest. I should be more boundaried, and that's where I'm going to come to you and get some advice. But I'll say to him, Mommy needs some mommy time, whether it's 10 minutes, 30 minutes, and he's learned to respect and admire my work life, you know. And this idea of bad mommies work, good mommies are home all the time. Mm. I've taught him that good mommies work, as you know. And it's important for me to work because I can give him more and be more present, you know. But it is. It's hard. It's really hard. And it can be exhausting at times because, I give a lot to both. And then I add in mental health advocacy and I'm just like, what am I doing? It's so much. But I guess if you're driven and you have a passion, you somehow make it work.
And final question, what's the biggest driver of your determination to succeed and change the world around you?
It's interesting. I actually had a line. I was at watching cross country the other day of my son's, and I thought about, you know how they say your tombstone, you should live your life as though you're reading the message on your tombstone and what you want that to say to others. And I've actually forgotten. I've actually forgotten what it was, but I guess I resonate with that Viktor Frankl quote, which is the meaning of my life is to help others find the meaning in these. And for me, I want to leave this earth having inspired people and having inspired people to talk vulnerably about themselves authentically and to be able to serve others from a place of just love and service I don't know. It really wasn't the line. Mm. I have to actually find out the line. No, it was so powerful. Why didn't I write it down? And that's the other thing. You have to write things down as they come to mind. I'm sure you do.
Absolutely. You never find me without a notebook and pen because I've got such a busy mind and so much going on that if you don't catch it when it crosses, you know, your prefrontal cortex, you're likely to forget it. But you have brought so much wisdom into this podcast today, Yael. Thank you so much for joining us. And what struck me most in this conversation is your charisma. And dynamite definitely comes in small packages. You started off by saying that a small tree can't grow under a big tree. Mm. And I think that is a really empowering statement for any leader, any parent, is that we have to make space for the people around us to grow. Mm. They're not going to grow in our shadow. You really embody reinvention and learning because through your story, you spoke about doing different jobs before you stepped into the family dynasty, that you were able to discover who you were in a different part of the world by doing some really ordinary stuff. And it's quite interesting that you gave yourself the gift of doing some ordinary stuff like packing boxes, where you just had to pitch up and do what you were told.
I miss it so much.
Versus now, as this leader has to put her best foot forward all the time and be on purpose all the time and be deciding what everyone else is going to be doing all the time. So, you know, I think to have had the opportunity that you did was important. And you also mentioned something else interesting. You went into sales at some point. Mm. And I keep saying this on this podcast, that if anybody has the opportunity to step into sales in any way, shape or form at any point in their career, take it. Mm. Because sales is the lifeblood of any business. So if you ever want to be an entrepreneur, seek an opportunity to get into sales to understand how sales works. And I thought that was interesting. And really what you do as a business is you sell property. You are in the business
of
sales.
And I happen to be very good at selling just by being me, you know. And that's what
you're charismatic.
People need to learn. Ah, thank you.
But also what struck me was that you have a deep understanding of human behavior and human nature. And you say you're constantly reading books about psychology and things like that. So you're open to learning. You're prepared to learn. So we've got to always be selling, always be connecting, and always be learning. You also illustrated that life doesn't unfold in a straight line. Not for you, not for me, not for anyone. And you were really candid and vulnerable about your journey and about your story. And so you really do walk your talk. And that's huge because there are people who say grand things, but they don't always walk their talk. And I'd like to end on this line that you said. For anybody who is leading people, whether it is your family or whether it is your business, you said, understand the humanness of the humans working for you.
That's a good line. I need to write that down.
I wrote it down. I'll share it with you.
Thank you.
Said by my friend and colleague, Yael Geffen. So those were just some of the pearls that came out for me, but there's just been so much. Do you have a final piece of advice for our viewers to help them to win at both work and life? One final word, and where can they contact you?
So, well, if they're interested in property, which is a huge passion of mine, www.sotheby'srealty.co.za. They're interested in me. I have my own website, which was also kind of a thing like, oh boy, www.yaelgeffen.com. I think the word that I left out today, which I'd like to end with, is accountability. Because if you can't be accountable for yourself, you can't be accountable to other people. And what I'm trying to teach people is it's okay to say, I dropped the ball. I have so much more respect for someone that says, eek, I dropped the ball, than excuses and coming up, because I'm very solution oriented. So I like to know the problem before the drama unfolds so I can get to the solution. But people who cover up their mistakes because they're too afraid that they'll get into trouble or cannot accept accountability. Accountability is such an important part of leadership. It's such an important part of being a good parent. It's such an important part of being in a relationship, in a family. So be accountable.
Absolutely. What a great way to bring today's podcast to a close. And to all of our listeners, I'd love to hear your thoughts, comments, and suggestions. Do drop them into my inbox at info@nickybush.com. And please, please don't forget to share this podcast with your friends and colleagues, because I'm sure that all of Yael's wisdom will help everybody in your circle.